I have to credit Marge, our CEO, for her ballsy play of saying, we're just going to do this in-house. We've been manufacturing for as long as we've been manufacturing. We know we had the processes in place. We know how to do what we need to do. We need to get scaled SMT PCBA here in Houston.
Welcome to the Manufacture Houston podcast, where Houston's manufacturers come to share, learn, and grow. Brought to you by Alchemy Industrial. For more information, check out alchemyindustrial.com.
On this episode of the Manufacture Houston podcast, we talk to Brian Laney, who is the VP of Sales and Product Development at Alert Tech. Brian takes us through an incredible story of his family's business as it navigated the global pandemic. I know you'll love today's episode.
Brian, welcome to the show. How are you?
Good to be here. I'm doing well. It's a nice chilly day in Houston, right?
It is a nice chilly day. We don't have very many of them, but it's nice to have them. Well, I've really been looking forward to this conversation with you. We met a couple of weeks ago at the East End Maker Hub and learned a lot about you and your company's story. And I think it's such a real story of what manufacturers have to deal with and how they're navigating and changing. And so thanks again for being on the show. I appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
So let's kick off. Well, great. Well, let's just kick off with some intros for you. I'd love to learn more about you, and then we can talk about the company too. So tell us about you and your background, and you know, weave in whatever you want to share about the company, and we'll move through the conversation that way.
Well, it's hard to extract me from the company, particularly when everybody understands the history here. But I'm Brian Laney. I'm the VP of Sales and Product at Alert Tech. I also, like many manufacturing businesses, wear a lot of hats. And I think that, you know, when you talk about contract manufacturing and doing things for folks like building, being a salesman really is just being an engineer that's on both sides of the ball, right? We have to be able to work with the client, able to work with our capabilities and in-house resources, and make sure that everything gets done in a quality way, right? So that's one of the things that I do there. Grew up in Houston, born and raised south side of Houston in Seabrook, Clear Lake area. And then went to school in California for a year, came back to Houston, went to the University of Houston, studied history and sociology, so not particularly engineering-y titles, but was a big part of the community there at U of H. And I really, really can't stress to anybody that doesn't know about U of H or how it's transformed, but we in Houston have such a powerhouse there with the University of Houston, and it's just growing by leaps and bounds. So super proud to have been a part of that. And then, left university and took my first job as a security software salesman. Was great. It taught me so much about infrastructure, Sarbanes-Oxley, PCI, HIPAA, things that are really important to the underpinnings of our current world. And then I got a call from my boss now, who's also my mom, Marge Laney. And she said, "Hey, we really want you to come over here. We got a lot of stuff going on. Really need your help." So I was happy to do that. And so time has passed, and here I am, doing what I love to do. Actually, I really, really love working with my family and with the company that we built.
So so thanks for that intro, Brian. So I've got a ton of questions for you, especially around family business stuff, and we'll get to that, because I think family businesses are unique in their world of extremes, I think. And so I'm sure we'll talk about that. So tell us more about the company. And after you get through the introduction, I do want to dig into some of the changes that you guys had to navigate in the pandemic, because it
I think those are pretty substantial changes and not easy. So that will be interesting, I think, for people to hear about. But tell us about what you guys do and customers you serve, the services you offer, et cetera.
Alert Tech is a 30-year-old company. We have always been in manufacturing, but in manufacturing for ourselves. So we have a whole line of OEM products that we sell, service, design, engineer, manufacture, sell, and then install and service in perpetuity with retail, large scale retail. So we do a lot of people counting, analytics around customer experience, call buttons, in-store alerting. So allowing somebody who's, say, coming to pick up a pick up their online order at a at an American Eagle, they will get the associates in that store will get messages over their headset saying that somebody's on their way. So it just really cleans up that experience and makes it scalable to a whole lot of stores, which all those brands that we work with are large scale. So that that beginning of our life in retail technology just was a great experience. It's a tough market. The realities of retail right now and what they're up against, really only the most innovative are going to come out the other side. And that innovation doesn't necessarily need to be super high tech, right? They just need to be adaptable and understand the market forces and then be able to move quickly enough to stay on the edge against a competitor like Amazon, who is, you know, not unbeatable, but certainly a tough competition when they really don't have to make money selling anything. They can make their money on web services. So we did that, and you know, great business. Took us up through 2011 is where kind of the story starts to branch. You know, all of our systems have always been pretty infrastructure-ish, right? So we install systems that have hard wires that run buttons and sensors inside the business. And I probably got 11 phone calls from folks saying, "Hey, do you just have a call button that I can just put on a wall and press the button and somebody hears it over the radio?" And I said, "No, no, 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 no." And then finally I said, why do I keep saying no to this? Like, this is seriously something we can do. So, we struck out to design that product, and we did. It was the first product that I had ever taken from a drawing on a paper. I still have the paper with the shape of the product on it, the very first time I sketched it, and learned an unbelievable amount of lessons in the process, right? So we brought that all the way from the concept through to mass manufacturing. In a pretty short period. And at that very same time, we were sitting here going like, well, we can make 500 of these here in-house. Our production facility at the time was set up to do box build and PCBA, but at a very small scale. This is back around 2011. And what came up is probably something that comes up to everybody was, you know, especially at the time, well, why aren't you in China, right? Why aren't you doing this in China? So being the kind of people that we are, we weren't really interested in doing, there's kind of two paths people can take, right? They can take a path where they call up these services companies who will kind of liaise you through the process. And, you know, it's pretty clear, for at least to me at the time, that those folks were going to, they're not really out for our best interest per se. They kind of have a vetted group of people that they work with over there in each different specialty, and they try to vector you towards them. So we decided, well, we're not going to do that. We're not going to just jump off into that world. We're going to go over to the Asia Sources show in Hong Kong, and we're going to go meet vendors, right? So we got on an airplane. Remember that eye-opening experience, my first long haul over there. I think it was the last time I flew coach overseas because somewhere across the Pacific, when my backside was completely flat, I decided I understood business class all of a sudden. So we got there, we walked around the show and we found vendors and they said, you know, oh, yeah, of course we can do this. We're ISO 9001. We've built laptops for HP. We've done, you know, whatever the most extravagant example of what they've done is. And we said, oh, that's great. Well, look, we're going to be coming to your factory as soon as you'll have us. And, that's where we started to see some of the little nuances of China manufacturing, right? The folks that were at the show were the ones who were really the business development folks that spoke the best English, who were most concerned with saying kind of, yes, we can do everything just to start the conversations. A lot of them weren't really expecting us to say, okay, hey, are you going to be at your factory on Friday so that we can show up? So we booked up a pretty aggressive schedule and we went over the border, got to our hotel, and the next morning, you know, we started to wait for the factory buses to come get us, to take us to these factories that we were kind of staying in Central, and we needed to get to, most of this stuff was happening in Bowon at the time and still. So we went to these factories and, man, super eye-opening. The best thing to explain to somebody who's never been on their own, is that you may be visualizing Foxconn, and that is an exception to the rule. I mean, China is an amazing place for getting things done. They certainly have a mentality of getting it done. Some of the infrastructure, some of the setups are certainly not what we would consider global scale grade, like high grade work. Now, not to say that they're not doing the work and not to say they're not doing a good job of it, but so all that to say, we spent the next week kissing a lot of frogs. We went to a lot of places that, you know, the photoshopped picture on the brochure was extremely deceptive and the capabilities that they had listed were equally deceptive. And we drank a lot of tea with a lot of really great guys. But we decided, hey, we really need to take some time. So we spent the time to find the people, long story long. And we did actually set up some good relationships, and we kind of started off on our China manufacturing process. So,
Brian, let me interrupt with a couple of questions. This is a really great story of your experience. When you guys went over there, did you have someone that was helping you, or were you just on your own trying to navigate the puzzle of Chinese manufacturing?
We had nobody to help us. We had one of those, I mentioned earlier that there are those liaisons. We met with a guy that we had talked to, who had met us here in Houston, actually, at our office. And we thought we would work with him, but it became, like I said, very apparent very quickly that it was like vector us towards these four factories. You know, this was he was the outside salesman for these places. And that, you know, we're definitely not just along for the ride, right? We need to be in control of that. And so we parted ways with that relationship in the first day or two, and then we were on our own.
So how did the trip end up after spending a week or so visiting lots of different factories? How did the trip finally finish up?
Well, I'll say that the biggest thing that happened to me was just this huge sea change in how I visualized product flow, manufacturing in the world. So huge change in how I saw that. Understanding how these places operate was eye-opening. And you know, at the end of the day, we did meet folks that did what we need to do, and we left that trip with with our vendors that we wanted to start the process with. And actually, two of those vendors we still work with from time to time, and they are great. And some of the folks that we met at that time actually have worked for us. So we have an office now in Shenzhen that we use for sourcing, and we have employees there that were previously at our vendors and are now what we kind of consider a superpower in the company, is that, you know, sourcing in China, mainland China, with national help is a huge benefit, because their markets, the availability, digging deep into old stock, finding EOL and obsolete parts, qualifying those parts and getting them over here to do production is hugely valuable.
So in terms of getting your own team in China, that's a very big decision for any company, especially small to mid-sized American companies. Did that sort of just evolve? Was it a decision that you made going in there? Tell us about that whole decision-making process to finally have people on the ground in China that worked for your company.
Well, it certainly wasn't what we went in there thinking we were going to do. And probably the first, second, third, and through the fifth or sixth trip over there, that wasn't in our scope. But the relationships that we built with some key people, Mary Young, who's a part of our, is on our team, is really just a tremendous relationship. And without having that, that would have never happened. But like I said, it's a superpower. We get a lot from our relationships.
I can only imagine. I think that is a superpower. So take us through the period of time leading up to the pandemic and the beginning of the pandemic. And I think it would be interesting to hear about how that began to change how did that begin to change the company and what you had to deal with?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny. It kind of starts sounding like a broken record when he's like, 2020 was weird, right? And it's like, yeah, 2020 was weird. But, you know, 2020 was weird and terrifying, especially when, you know, we built a company that was largely underpinned by our relationships in retail. Retail hit a literal brick wall. Within 1 week or 2 weeks, we got letters and notices from each of our clients, some of which we had been with for 26 years plus. And they said, hey, we're stopping all service, all new installation, all everything. So of all the things we ever thought could happen, like just turning off service was unheard of, because, you know, these systems are in these stores. There's, you know, over 8,000 of those stores, and they all have things happening, lightning strikes and water pipes and, you know, so there's the service aspect that was a nice part of our kind of cash flow for the company, right? And when that all turned off, we really sat there and said, well, what are we going to do to be competitive in this, I hate the word, but this new world, right? This new normal.
So just I want to pause you before you go into that, because I'm really curious about these phone calls that you received. When you got these phone calls or these notifications, what was sort of your internal response, just sort of your gut feel on getting this kind of message from some of your long-term customers?
Honestly, I think weren't we all in the same spot where we were kind of going, look, like, hey, bud, I get it. You know, like I would do the same thing if I were you. Certainly no animus, certainly just a business decision. Everybody was reeling. But then you hang up the phone and that happens a few times in a row and you start wondering, okay, where does this leave me? Mm-hmm. Where are we now? So we're really, really lucky. You'll probably hear me say this a million times, and I really believe it. We're just very fortunate, and we've done it through hard work, you know, being in the positions that we're in, but we're lucky to have a team of people that when things get really weird, rather than pulling back and becoming blocked off from ideas, it's like the exact opposite. The ideas just started flowing like crazy. So one of our systems, the Sense system, is a really, really, it's a really cool device. Has an RS-45 network. We have a protocol that can handle just a huge number of sensors, inputs and outputs, a great compute module on that board that allows us to, you know, handle those inputs and outputs and pass voltages and everything. Really great system. And when we sat there and looked at what we could do, we started, you know, really paying attention to far UVC sanitation.
What does that mean? What does far UVC sanitation mean?
So the UV spectrum on the far end of the UVC segment of that spectrum, there, you know, there's a wavelength and a pocket of wavelengths that is very good at deactivating and destroying the DNA inside of viruses and microbes. It's also very bad at penetrating skin, so anything hard. So it's a very niche piece of the spectrum that allows energy to be delivered to an area that can deactivate viruses and microbes, but not harm humans. So it's human safe. So we reached out to the folks that had those excimer lights and said, hey, look, we're in this space. This is what we'd like to do. And everybody was kind of took us in with open arms. And we were in a position to kind of plug that in with our current systems and have a really cool answer to disinfection and making areas safer. It, really, really great system, because it not only cleans and disinfects the surfaces that it touches, but it also disinfects the whole column of air between the excimer element and the surface. So extremely good at what it does. We worked with some really great scientists that were involved in some projects with this in NASA. And we brought that to market. And it's interesting. We got a lot of interest. I don't think that retail is the place for it. I think it probably would have a better market in government and places like that. Mm-hmm. But what we came out of it with was something essentially to work on while the world was falling down around us. And that was important. But what really changed the whole seas in 2020 was what happened when we, our biggest client, and I don't want to go into too much detail on our clients,
right?
But one of our biggest clients, came to us and said, hey, this is a client for one of our products, that's in an OEM, ODM relationship. And at the very moment that, you know, darkest before dawn and all that, right? We got a phone call that said, hey, or no, actually I got a bunch of emails with purchase orders. And I said, you know, it just really goes to, it was very 2020, because I get all these purchase orders in my email, and instead of like going, hey, this is great, I sat there and go, wow, what kind of horrible mistake is
and we were all that sort of the this is too good to be true mindset back then.
Yeah. And so I got all these purchase orders. I called up the client. I said, hey, you know, just checking in on this. I think maybe your ordering software has, you know, not caught up with 2020 yet. And they said, no, this is all real. We've got this really big client, that is going to push this product through to a lot of locations. And, so how fast can you make 6,000 of these things?
Yeah, those are really beautiful words to hear from any customer, right?
Well, now scary, because keep in mind, you know, we're at the end of 2020. We had laid off, excruciatingly laid off, 50% of our company. We had drawn down our inventory. We've done everything to keep ourselves moving in this uncertainty. And all of a sudden you get this and you say, okay, great. But you know, you've got two dots, right? Where you're at and where you're going. And it seemed in conventional business practices that we had been building with a global supply chain and global manufacturing, we were in a pickle, right? So we called up our China factories or contract manufacturers, and we said, hey, you know, how fast can you do this? They said, well, we can do it pretty fast. Just need 100% payment up front. Right.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, that's
right.
It.
No problem. Because they were dealing with the same things we were. Right. You know, they had probably been consuming capital over a complete shutdown. They had to bring everything back online. So that wasn't an option. And we were kind of in a place where everything was on a table. I reached out to a lot of contract manufacturers in the United States at that point. And I had some very, I had some conversations that didn't really make me feel very good about it. I'll tell you that. I mean, I had a spectrum of people who said, hey, we're too busy. We have too much going on. We're not taking new clients, all the way through to, you know, we weren't big enough. And I then went down to Mexico, spent some time looking at some options there. Kind of a similar situation with that. And I have to credit Marge, our CEO, for her ballsy play of saying, we're just going to do this in-house. We've been manufacturing for as long as we've been manufacturing. We know we have the processes in place. We know how to do what we need to do. We need to get scaled SMT PCBA here in Houston.
Well, so that's, I want to just sort of pause here on a couple of things that I'm hearing about your company and sort of the decision-making and the culture within your business that, I'm sure you've had business plans and, you know, all these other things, but it also seems like you're just having to be agile and on your feet and responding to whatever the reality is at the time. You just have to deal with it. So it's an interesting, I think it's an interesting observation on your business.
It is. And, it's a delicate line. So we've always been very careful to be experts in what we're doing. So we don't chase two rabbits, both get away mentality. But in the pursuit of one path, we will jump over any hurdle. And that may look like, designing a product for the COVID situation, or that might look like going over to China and figuring out how to do China manufacturing from a blank sheet of paper. But it's always on a very direct path to where we're going.
So that's a really great lesson, I think, for our audience. You said in the pursuit of that one path, you'll jump through or jump over any obstacle. Great business lesson to really focus on what it is you're trying to do as a business and to align as many resources as you can around that. So that's, I think, a wonderful business lesson. So Brian, you guys are sitting around the table and after talking to people that can't be responsive to your needs, you decide to gear up manufacturing on your own. So that is, you're right, that's a ballsy decision. Take us from that decision to where you are today in terms of your own manufacturing and what you're doing in that space.
So from that moment, we got on the phone calls with manufacturers of and representatives of different machines. As anybody here who's listening knows, when you get into the world of procuring kind of capital equipment like that, that's incredibly intensive process, right? What speccing out the machine, understanding what capabilities you need, what you don't need. If anybody's ever bought any of those machines, everything has an add-on or a plug-in or a new feature that you can add on. So it's a delicate line to walk to figure that out. But our goal was, okay, we're going to do this. We are not going to do anything but the best. So we purchased, ASM, BTU, Fuji, Pillar House, Takaya. You know, these names might not mean something to everybody who's listening here, but those are the top of the line in their specific places, right? Not to say that they're the only top of the line, but they're top tier. I wish I could like rattle off everybody's names that helped me. These distributors, reps, the thing that was immediately obvious to me, and I hope that our listeners will appreciate or take this to heart. If you are deciding to get into a manufacturing business, or you want to scale up your domestic work, the place to start is those manufacturers reps, those distributors reps. They know everybody in your field. It's a small world, and these guys have been around the block. They were generous with their time and expertise. They were clear in their information that they gave me, but they were also willing to tell me when they weren't the right fit, which is, I mean, just mind blowing how much help I got from those folks. So not only did I get great information, but honestly, I count some of them as friends now. We've spent time together. And I really appreciate that. So that's, if you're taking notes at home, one thing I would say is reach out to these guys and tell them what you're trying to accomplish, and you're going to be blown away at the way that they can help you knock down barriers. And they did. And it was really great.
How long did it take you from the time you began really researching the kind of equipment, engaging with distributors, reps, et cetera, to the point where you actually do or did have an operating manufacturing facility?
So this is a story that can only be told in the time that it happened. But we were looking for equipment at a time when nobody was buying equipment. We were looking for financing when nobody was deploying capital. And we were under the gun ourselves. So we were the fastest from, hey, I'm Brian, we're trying to figure this out, to we had the machine set up and running that Fuji had ever had. So it was something like 30 days.
Oh my God, that's incredible.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was super incredible. And it was actually, I'm hoping that everybody who's listening to this is some kind of deep nerd. But the nerdiness level of this was just, it was over the moon. We had just technicians coming, we had everything being set up, we had training scheduled, we had this huge effort that took place in such a short time, and it was amazing.
You probably had like 100% of Fuji's sales and onboarding staff dedicated to
everybody. Everybody, because there was nothing else going on. You're right, and people were that time in our world had broken down people's barriers of saying, "Nah, I can't do it like that." You know, it had made things. Everybody was yes, and that's pretty awesome. And you know, one of the things that is the cornerstone of the conversation here is, why domestic? Why do it here? What is the difference? And I'll tell you that the number one difference is that as Americans and as Texans, I'll even put the extra on there, we're super driven to get it done. And like I said earlier with our own thing, you know, jumping over those hurdles, people here are more willing to jump over a hurdle with you and spend the time to kind of make that problem their own. And that's something that we've seen over and over.
So you're up and running now. So you've got this, you've got your own internal manufacturing that is serving your internal demand. Is that where you'll sort of keep it, or are you also going to be offering up your manufacturing capacity for other people that need it too?
So when we decided to do this, and we made the decision on the products that we bought and the facility that we built, it was always with the idea of making it a contract manufacturing facility. It's such a powerful thing to have been on both sides of the ball, having those conversations with contract manufacturers. Yeah, when we made the decision to buy this equipment, we did it with the intention of being a contract manufacturer. So the way that we set up the facility, the way that we evaluated the equipment was so that it was well suited for low volume, high mix PCBA. And then we have a whole box build floor for great people. So, you know, the equipment's only one part of the picture. The thing that really came together for us was totally unforeseeable and could not have been planned. But a large tier one contract manufacturer who was previously in south of Houston closed their facility after 30, 40 years in Houston. And I would like to thank them, because the people that were in that factory are some of the most talented, positive thinking, just impressive folks that I've ever worked with, because they came over to us and we were able to take 30 years, 33 years of knowledge that they had built at this tier one facility and bring it into AlertTech. So if we were just having a conversation about, boy, Brian, you really can sign a lot of papers for a lot of capital equipment, I don't think that would be a very impressive way to talk about what we are as a contract manufacturer now. The people and the expertise that we have acquired over the last year are a catalyst, an absolute catalyst to where we're going to be in the market, where we are in the market, and where we're going to be in the market. We just so lucky to have those folks with us.
That's great. So Brian, I've got one final question as we wrap up here. So I'm going to put you in a time machine, and that time machine's going to take you back to the first day that you began working for your family business. What advice do you think you would give that Brian some time ago that really help you as you've traveled your journey these last few years?
Well, that's a tough one. I would say that the highs are never as high as they feel in the moment, and the lows are never as low as they feel in the moment. I think that all of us who are principals of our companies or owners of our companies, it's very easy to feel like that, you know, you've just either won the whole thing or you've lost the whole thing. And that's not the case. And the kind of follow on to that is that the littlest things that you do for people, the smallest extra help that you provide, let's say somebody sends over some boards to be made and we spend the extra time to, you know, clean something up or whatever. And we do that without charge. That's something that makes almost more of an impact than just, you know, hitting your target, right? It's putting the finer tip on things. So I'd probably go back in time and say that the more value you can add, even in the margins, the small things, those are the ways that you really build lasting relationships.
Well, that's great advice for anyone, for younger Brian and for all of us listening here. So Brian, what a great story. You know, I think that today survival is the new black. I mean, the fact that you made it through and you're living to fight another day says a lot about the team at your company, your family, and all the people that are working at the business. So we're grateful that you would share the story with us. Where can people learn more about the business and get in touch with you?
The best place to learn about us is AlertTech, AlertTechSMT.com. And you can also find me on LinkedIn, find Adrian Leal, who's our account executive. You can find him on LinkedIn as well. And I just, you know, open book for people to reach out, ask about maybe bringing some boards or bringing some work back to Houston. We will make that an easy transition for you. And I'll challenge anybody by saying that we'll bring more value than you think we will. It's great.
That's great. Well, Brian, thanks again for the time today. I appreciate it. Really enjoyed the conversation, and I'm looking forward to seeing you around town, and maybe we can make some stuff together. I'm sure we will.
For sure. All right, Mush. Hey, good luck to you, and love what you're doing. So keep it up.
Thank you.
This has been the Manufacture Houston podcast, brought to you by Alchemy Industrial. For more information, check out alchemyindustrial.com. If you'd like to be on the show or want to recommend someone to get on the show, just reach out to me on LinkedIn. M-U-S-H-K-H-A-N, Mush Khan. I look forward to hearing from you.